Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It is the 11th day of October 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And, well, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And this may be the one normal night we have for the next two. Quick program note. I don't plan on missing the program tomorrow, but that possibility does exist. And it does exist because Ferg is having surgery tomorrow. You may recall I mentioned that he had a piece of rotten luck when a piece of jagged metal rammed into the opposite side of jabbed into the opposite side of his right hand from his thumb, and went into his hand. And apparently, if you look at a hand, whether it's a normal sized hand or a great big hand like, you know, Johnny Bench's, he could hold like 11 baseballs, you know, or just a little tiny orange hand like Donald Trump's, a hand is from a physical standpoint is some pretty crowded real estate. I mean, there's a lot going on in a hand. You got blood vessels, you got tendons, you got bones, lots of bones. You got nerves, and muscle. Did I mention muscles? Yeah, I guess I did. And it's all kind of compactly, evolution has sort of compacted it in there to do specific things, and it's pretty amazing, the physiology of the hand. And so what Ferg did is that piece of jagged metal jammed into his hand, hurt like hell, and apparently damaged tendons and slashed some nerves. So that on Ferg's right hand, and he's fortunate in this, in so far as he's left-handed, but on his right, but this is his picking hand, guitar-wise, he has no feeling in and very little movement to his little finger and his ring finger on his right hand. So that means they're going to take him into surgery tomorrow and work on figuring out whether or not that's reparable. Now, this is all scheduled for very early tomorrow, just like yesterday was very early yesterday. At the same hospital that was about 3 hours late getting my procedure started. So, and this being general surgery, there will be general anesthesia, which means the recovery time is a little bit different, and hopefully they'll send him home, but I don't know that for sure, which is a long way of saying I hope to be here tomorrow evening, but I can't promise it. So I hope you will please forgive me on that account if I am not here. You know me, just taking any old opportunity to take the evening off and go gallivanting around having surgery on my son. Sheesh. So that's that. And then, then of course, next Monday, the 17th, the Rally for Coal River Mountain will be taking place down at the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, and I'm in charge of the PA system and the streaming and everything, so that's another story entirely. Hopefully I'll be back in time for that as well. Just trying to keep up, keep everybody up to date with what the schedule is and everything. So that's the housekeeping part of it. This is, of course, a listener-supported program, and I want to, let you know that we try to raise $200 every evening, rain or shine, whether we need it or not. So that's what we're going to try to do this evening. One at 200, two at 100, four at 50, eight at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 1/4, or 64 at $3.13, because we round up from the 12 1/2. 10 at 20, 20 at 10, you know. And so we'll try to raise that this evening and keep paying bills. I meanwhile am still trying to get sorted out the gizmo nightmare that the fine folks at Frontier Communications have occasioned, which has interrupted the my ability to connect my gizmo to Progressive Voices gizmo, you know, because I lead this life of indolent boredom. Anyway, if you would like to help keep the horn on the air, there are two means. One is PayPal. Head on radionetwork.com and click on contribute, or you can just use bobkincaid@gmail.com through your PayPal address and click on sending money to friends and family, and we won't get hit with the transfer fee. Or you can use the United States Postal Service. And the mailing address for that is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Checks and money orders, please, made payable to The Horn, not made payable to Bob Kincaid. I don't see him. That's Boss Man Wayne's job. He goes to the UPS store where the little PMB 318 is, and he takes his spider-proof gloves with him to reach into the mailbox that often has, you know, full of echoes, and well, you know how that goes. Sometimes he takes an old axe handle with him in case he runs into a member of the Klan, because they get their mail at the same location, because UPS seems to think that doing business with the Klan is not a problem. You know, just business. Tell Michael, tell the Kliegel we always liked him. It was only business. Yeah. So that's, and by the way, we welcome new subscribers. We're still, one of these days, we're going to have 400 $10 a month subscribers, at which point I won't have to talk about fundraising anymore. And boy, am I looking forward to that day. But we're not there yet. We're a long way from it. And so we welcome new subscribers, $10 a month or more. And new subscribers do get bumper stickers. So, a horn bumper sticker, a They Want It All bumper sticker. You get both if you subscribe at $20 a month. Yes, you do. To do that, just click the little box there in the contribute tabs that make this a recurring monthly contribution. And thanks very much to all of our subscribers, because in many instances, it's the monthly subscribers that help make up the shortfalls, rather often, as a matter of fact. So, of course, this being the 11th day of October 2016, and being a Tuesday, it is, of course, Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday being the day that we set aside each and every week to celebrate Titanic examples of right-wing intellectual exercises. Yes. It gets its name from a certain morning many years ago now when our buddy Jim was listening to the morning monotone in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, as he was interrupted in his daily essay of reading in that stunning monotone, reading the newspaper to his right-wing faithful, who apparently couldn't read it for themselves. You know, the mouth breathers and knuckle walkers and knuckle walkers and knuckle breathers and mouth walkers, etc. And he stopped to take a call from one of the faithful who said, "Steve, how come it is you reckon that they is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? Because we ain't nowhere near the beach, near the ocean, near nothing." To which he replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Titanic plates, not tectonic. Titanic plates. Hmm. Yeah. No word yet on the movement of the Titanic samovar. No. So that's the origin of Titanic Tuesday. And we got some dandies. I promise you we do. We got some real Titanic intellect out there, and it's almost unfair, but yeah, we got to do this. Let's get the hockey puck and the duct tape out early for Miss White Privilege 2016. Tommy Lauren, who still miraculously has something resembling a television show, even as the Beckerheads, and she works for the Beckerhead, even as the Beckerheads media juggernaut begins to sink beneath the wave. "Remember what I told you about the lifeboats, Tommy?" Yeah, Tommy is, Tommy's all upset that everybody's all upset about the fact that Benito Cheeto is a vulgar, misogynistic misanthrope. And she's got a message for you. And you know, so stop, right? He brags about committing acts that to everybody except Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third of Alabamistan, Talabama, just because he doesn't think it's sexual assault to walk up and grab a woman by her genitals. Well, oh dear. Other people do, and Tommy Lauren is mad at them. Tommy Lauren is, of course, understand please. Tommy Lauren is mad at everybody, but you know, she's all of 24 long years upon this planet. And she's already got herself her very own cable TV show that's, you know, watched by dozens. And she's a good, God-fearing, evangelical, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, fundamentalist, amosexual Republican. And she's a populist. And she's gonna explain it all to us on this Titanic Tuesday, which is why she gets pride of place, I guess. Okay, so I've talked a little bit. Does everybody have... Yes, we've all got... Mm-hmm. We've all got our hockey pucks? Good.
guys, it's time for final thoughts. And as promised, I'm sharing my thoughts on these Trump tapes. All right, let's be real. It's not good. It doesn't sound good. It doesn't look good. It makes us uncomfortable. It makes it hard to defend our guy when he says things like grab her by the, well, you know. Yep, I get it. I've spent all weekend thinking about it. Here's the deal. This recording does not surprise me at all. Be honest, most of you aren't shocked either. It's Donald Trump, a billionaire businessman, a reality star, not the Pope. Is anyone really that taken aback by what he said?
Hey, well, you put it that way, Tommy. In your own charming, congenial way, I guess we aren't. What she's admitting is that Donald Trump is a pretty disgusting, loathsome, misogynistic asshole. But see, she's on a cable news program, so she can't say asshole. No. And he's not the Pope. So that's the standard. Everybody else can say what Donald Trump said and get away with it with Tommy Lauren as long as they're not the Pope. Yeah, I don't know how she feels about it if, say, elders of the Church of Kolob say it. But, you know, everybody, and especially Donald, because, you know, we expect massively wealthy, powerful business leaders to talk like that because, you know, they all don't. Because Tommy Lauren.
I know how many of you Trump supporters are feeling. It's not that these recordings necessarily surprise you or even change your opinion of him. It just doesn't look good. I get it. But for all those never-Trumpers and bleeding hearts out there saying, I told you so, shut the hell up. Don't...
Yeah, shut the hell up. Tommy Lauren does not want to hear it because she has a titanic intellect and you're wrong. And she knows so much because she's been on this planet for 24 long years, okay? So shut up! Yeah. Arnold, with a quick note. And I certainly understand the sentiment. How did she ever... get a show? Who is she? Arnold says, I don't even think her own words are her words are her own. Oh no, she gets out her she gets out her newsprint tablet with the extra wide lines and her extra thick pencil and writes out her own words every day. You can tell because there aren't very many long ones. On the other hand, James points out, and he says, what Trump said is no surprise to me. I thought he was sleazy. I was right. Well, there's that. But you bleeding hearts, shut up!
Fall around acting holier than thou about this like you've never heard anyone say anything like that before. Give me a break. And don't try to shame women who still support Trump. No, we aren't crying in the corner about this, and that doesn't make us any less woman, so save your pity.
I don't think anybody's ever introduced young Tommy to the concept of the straw person because she just set one up and beat the tar out of it. Because after I heard this clip the first time, I went looking around trying to find a news story about Trump supporting women who support Trump's Trump. What? It's all so difficult. I went looking for a story about women who support Trump being shamed as being less womanly. I didn't find it. No, I really, I didn't. I would say she is the mistress of Snow White privilege. Yeah. Yes, Stockton Larry, I would agree.
Yeah.
I also haven't seen any news stories about women weeping in corners. But apparently, kind of like the aggrieved white woman at the USC-Alabama football game, she exists for Tommy. Yes.
And to all those Republicans now pulling their endorsements a month before the election, wow, just wow. The Democrats have been sitting on this for a while now, and they...
Time out, Tommy. Unless by the Democrats you mean the people who own Access Hollywood, sister, you're just stupid. I mean, if this had come out a little quicker, we could have had her for Moran Monday. But instead, it's Titanic Intellect and thus Titanic Tuesday. Access Hollywood, the backstory on the Trump recording, is actually that when the news began filtering out that folks who had worked around Trump on The Apprentice were beginning to say that he made numerous disgusting and demeaning remarks toward women on that program, people at Access Hollywood began looking through their own tapes. This isn't something that the Democrats have been sitting on. I mean, we've got medicine that'll take care of paranoia at that level for you, Tommy, if you really, really need it. This came out because it was prompted by people talking about what a shitbird Donald Trump had been during the production of The Apprentice. No. Of course, in the world that Miss Aggrieved White Privilege 2016 lives in, it was probably hidden on Hillary's secret server. It was probably an attachment to one of those 33,000 emails that Hillary is hiding from us.
Yes. I knew if they released it 2 days before the debate, a month before the election, and after the ballots had been printed, they could ensure the spineless GOP would turn tail and run to save their own asses and political career.
She said ass on television. I didn't know you could do that. But she done. And she looks so proud of herself when she says it, like she said a dirty word and mommy and daddy didn't even know it.
I think you're once again forgetting why we, the voters, chose Trump as our nominee over all of you. We are sick of this holier-than-thou persona you all parade around in public.
We are not amused. We are the Queen of England, and we will speak for all of the other Trumpansies, you elitists. I guess any minute now there'll be T-shirts out there saying, Tommy speaks for me. Or, you know, maybe Donald will reward her loyal service by taking a Tic Tac and just spontaneously kissing her. Donald Trump kissing Bandit. Ew.
We are sick of the fact that most of you were in office from 2002 to 2006 when we had the White House and both houses of Congress, yet did nothing.
And what was it you wanted to do, Tommy? Have Hillary put in a dungeon? Or maybe privatize Social Security. You're probably down with that. I seem to recall quite a bit being done on the watch of Dim Leader when he had the House and the Senate. I seem to recall a mad headlong rush to a war in Iraq because kind of sleazy rice goes great with kind of sleazy chicken. kind of sleazy Rice said we can't run the risk of the smoking gun being a mushroom cloud. And no one could ever imagine they would use planes as missiles. I'm pretty sure that didn't happen on Bill Clinton's watch. Right, yeah. Yeah, oh, but I'm sure that's not what she's talking about. I mean, what the fuck is she talking about? But then again, I think that's probably the beginning of every editorial meeting of Tommy Lawrence's program. What the fuck is she talking about today?
You just squawked. That's it. We still have border problems, tax problems, spending problems, and national security problems. You didn't do jack, but now you sit on a pedestal and pull your endorsement because of a leaked recording and the P word. Wow. You're the reason Trump is our candidate. He's far from perfect. He's not presidential. We know that. But you stopped listening.
Wait. She said that. She really said that. And she used the dick fingers, too. He's not presidential. We know that. So what she's admitting is that she and others are entirely supportive of a candidate for the presidency who has no business being the president. Now, I'm not saying Ann Coulter was right when she said that it was a terrible mistake to give women the vote. This is just a train wreck. You can't take your eyes off it. No. You just can't.
To your constituents and started playing the game for yourselves and your interests. That's why we chose Trump. At least he recognizes our frustrations.
Bless your little heart. That's right. He recognizes your frustrations. And if you're very, very good, he'll take you out for ice cream, Tommy. Arnold says, holy shit, that was the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. And here's the fun part, Arnold. We're not done yet. Oh, no, she's got a good 44 seconds of stupid left. And I'm afraid we almost drove poor Tracy off the 6 7/8 out there. Wait, what? Says Tracy. He's not presidential and we know it? If he's not presidential and you know it, clap your hands. If he's not presidential and you know it, clap your hands. If he's not presidential and you really, really know it, if he's not presidential, clap your hands and he'll grab you by the... Yeah. It's true. Laurel just sent me a video. Crushing a hockey puck with hydraulic pressure. I guess it could happen. All right, we've only got a little bit more of this titanic torture to suffer. All we got in common is our misery. The least we can do is share it. Yeah.
And still I say, I am far more bothered by what Hillary has done than by what Trump has said.
That's right. The Republican war on women continues because Tommy Lauren is more upset by what Hillary has done than by what Donald Trump has said. However, Tommy, if I can call you Tommy, he didn't say he would like to. He said he does it. And he used verb constructions that indicate that he has done it more than once. So we're not talking about what he said. We're talking about what he did. And I guess that's the disconnect for people like Miss White, Miss Aggrieved White Privilege 2016. She only considers them words. It's just words. It's just like what he said Sunday. It's words, just words, just more words. I can remember a time when the Republican Party screeched, "Words mean things!" And said things like, "My friends, the flag is falling! Give me another one of those pills." Nom, 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 nom. Donald Trump didn't say it, and I think he was lying Sunday night. He was either lying to Billy Bush or he was lying Sunday night. I tend to think he was lying Sunday night. I think that a conscienceless sociopath like Donald Trump would, in fact, very likely, because there are lots of women who say he has, put his hands on a woman regardless of her consent? Oh, yes. But she's upset with what Hillary's done. And what has Hillary done? Well, she killed Vince Foster!
Yeah. She did. She killed Vince Foster.
She had Ambassador Chris Stevens rubbed out in Benghazi, and he made 33,000 calls for help, and she wouldn't answer the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning. That's what Miss Aggrieved White Privilege 2016 says.
Truth is, his leaked recording is a problem because of how it makes us feel, not how it impacts governance. Does it impact border security, national security, trade, jobs, spending, or anything else that impacts your daily life? No! But same cannot be said for Hillary's dream of open trade and open borders. And remember, let he without sin cast the first stone.
Ha, 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 ha! Oh, I love it when she gets all biblical. Granted, it's not Wednesday or anything, but I have a feeling we're going to have to deal with some prayer meeting-ish stuff this evening because it's there. Where does that come from? It's generally referred to as Jesus and the woman taken in adultery. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It comes from the book of John. All right. John chapter 8, which is not a synoptic gospel. In other words, Matthew, Mark, and Luke have a common source. John doesn't. John was written by somebody who never even set eyes on Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi. But it comes from John chapter 8. And John chapter 8 says, Jesus went unto the Mount of Olives, and early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him, and he sat down and taught them. And the scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery, in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what sayest thou? This they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. that Jesus stooped down and with his finger wrote on the ground as though he heard them not. So when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had lifted up himself and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? She said, No man, Lord. And Jesus said unto her, Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Now we'll save the critical textual analysis, like the fact that most people don't, most serious biblical scholars don't even think it was part of the original text of the Gospel of John, that some creative monk or friar or whatever thought it was a neat story and that it would fit there and put it in there. We can leave that aside. But rather, in the case of Miss Aggrieved White Privilege 2016, Tommy Lauren, she lacks the essential awareness to realize what that story's about. Because you must understand that in the Mosaic Law, a woman can be raped. Raped. Grabbed by the pussy, if you will. And still be taken for stoning to death. Because the law of the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky considers women as vessels just chock full of sin, and if a man rapes a woman, it was probably her fault. Talk about rape culture. So poor little Atne Ute Aitbre, if you one what I in me, Tommy Lauren, didn't realize that she was being set up by the goddess of irony. She actually used a story from the Bible about a woman who had been sexually assaulted to excuse the admissions of the Republican nominee for president of having committed, well, you know, sexual assault. Because I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. And yes, that really did happen with Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions, the Tood, senator from Alabama. According to the Weekly Standard, Senator Sessions, who at one point in time was a federal prosecutor in the Southern District of Alabama, who is also a guy who once noted that he thought the Klan was pretty cool till he found out they smoked the marijuanas. He was asked if Trump's admissions constituted sexual assault. And Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III said, "I don't characterize that as sexual assault. I think that's a stretch. I don't know what he meant." Now, this is because, apart from those of us who pay, who delve pretty deeply into the weirdness of the right wing, most of America has no clue who Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is. He sounds like a cartoon character, both literally and figuratively. But we know. And we also know that he is an early and often supporter of Donald Trump. Now, marginally, he might be right. I don't characterize that as sexual assault. Within the oldie English common law definition of assault, assault happens before someone gets touched. Actually, what Trump was talking about would be a sexual battery. Because if one is put in fear of receiving an insulting or provoking touching, one has been assaulted. When the touching takes place, the assault is said to have merged into the next crime up the ladder, which is battery. Battery doesn't mean somebody's hit you with their fist. It can be as little as a tap. The merest contact between one person and another, or in this case, between Donald Trump and the vagina of another. But down in old Alabama, where the men are men and the women are delicate flowers of Southern femininity, and where it certainly wasn't sexual assault or even battery or rape, you know, if old Marse went down to the slave quarters back in the days before 1860 and had himself a fine old time, that wasn't rape, that was ownership. Kind of like old Marse Tom going to see his sister-in-law down to the quarters. I guess that's why Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III doesn't characterize that. I don't characterize that as sexual assault. Except it is. But even nastier than that, if I may, this being Titanic Tuesday and everything, whatnot and such as, even nastier than that is the spouse of the man she herself refers to as Old Serpent Head, James Carville. Very famously, James Carville and Mary Madeline being a vicious, to say the least, right-wing partisan. Mary Madeline was invited onto ABC's This Week with George Snuffleupagus program to talk about Trump. And, you know, the other problems that he's had. And Mary Madeline is still mad at the previous Trump outrage. She's still mad at former Miss Universe Alicia Machado. Remember back during the primary season when we got kind of upset when Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright said there's a special place in hell for women who don't vote for Hillary Clinton. And we thought that was kind of shitty. Well, what you're about to hear kind of made me revisit that thought, that idea. I don't know that there, I don't think there's a special place in hell for anybody because I don't believe in hell. I don't think there's any empirical evidence that hell is real. But there really is something obnoxious about attacking someone who has never attacked you. There's something obnoxious about going after Alicia Machado. Go watch the sex tape, folks. There's no sex tape. But Mary Madeleine is apparently still on board with the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, because she's willing to, oh my God, just listen to it.
Mary Matlin, Republican strategist Alex Castellanos, Democratic Congressman Keith Ellison from Minnesota, and Democratic strategist, former deputy campaign manager for President Obama, Stephanie Cutter. Thanks to all of you for joining us. I was doing a quick calculation during the break. We probably have about 200 years political campaign experience at this table right now. And Matt Dowd, I think it is very, very safe to say we've never seen anything like this weekend.
No, this is Hurricane Donald. This weekend is a Category 5.
See what he did? Oh, that's clever. George Snuffleupagus went to a guy named Matthew, who then talked about Hurricane Donald while Hurricane Matthew was killing, 18 people in North Carolina, which we're not really talking about. Because we have to talk about Trump because that's what you have to do. Or else, right.
You look at this, and I think we're going to look at the aftermath of this. I was thinking about the effect that this could actually have. To me, this is akin to Tiger Woods and the Escalade hitting the fire hydrant in 2009, and ever since that point, his career was basically careened.
Talking about Trump or the party?
I'm talking about Trump. Well, I think the party's already in disarray. The party, that has been the case for Baked-in.
That had nothing to do with the demise of the career of Eldrick Tiger Woods. Poor Matthew Dowd doesn't realize that Bart Kopp had put the hex on Tiger Woods, page after page after page, issue after issue after issue, saying, hex on thee, hex on thee, hex on thee. And I don't know, did Bart Kopp go on to the great beyond ever having lifted the hex from Tiger Woods? I don't think he did. But, they live in a bubble. They're in the Beltway. They don't know about stuff that, no.
The cake for the last year, they're going to have to figure out in the aftermath where they go from here. I think Donald Trump, both his political career and I think in many ways the debate tonight, is his financial career is on his line. His brand is seriously damaged.
Mary Matlin, what can he do?
Well, he can do more of what he's been doing, but I disagree with that. And I would say something similar that we have seen in our 200 years is New Hampshire, 1992, Monica Lewinsky in the White House. So here we have, this is the difference between the parties. We have a Democrat who acts with his intern in the White House and the party rallies around him. We have a Republican nominee who has a private conversation about sex he's not getting and the party abandons him.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. What's unprecedented here is not just the tape, it's the reaction over the last 48 hours.
Well, it says something about the party. Says something good about the party, that says something that is aggravating to conservatives out there of how the party does not stick with their nominee. He wasn't my first choice, second choice, or 16th choice. But
she's going to, by God, carry water for him now. Yeah. And, never mind that whole consent thing. See, what Donald Trump was talking about was a series of non-consensual acts. What happened between Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky was entirely consensual. I mean, there's no question about it. That woman, Ms. Lewinsky, never said it wasn't consensual. But let's go back to, and she calls him old serpent head. I'd say she's old serpent tongue, but yeah, never mind.
He's the guy.
Well, I think this tells you a couple of things. One is, you know, a terrible thing. I can't defend it and do not plan to. But I'm not sure that I'd have a little different view than Matt, because unlike Tiger Woods, there are big tidal forces underneath this debate. This election ultimately is not about Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, both of whom have...
What the... it's not about the election. It's not about Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. No, it's about freedom. Yeah, that's it. It's about emails. About poor Vince Foster. It's about Benghazi. Yeah, right. I think we can safely run on past Alex Castellanos. There's Mary Madeline shrugging some more. In her leather jacket from the Leni Riefenstahl collection.
Both of you on that, but isn't that exactly what the Republicans who've abandoned the ticket in the last 48 hours are worried about? They're saying any other Republican candidate this year would be well ahead.
But and it's too late to change. There are 2.8 million ballots that have already gone out in Florida, for example. And besides that, when you look at what Trump represents within the Republican Party, he mowed down 16 other candidates. Who's going to replace him? One of those that he defeated? The establishment's going to come in now and handpick an alternative?
George, I gotta say.
Gaggle. And this is still not what we're after or about. We'll breeze past Keith Ellison, the couple of seconds that he got, and we'll breeze past Stephanie Cutter, because what we want is, yes, Mary Madeline, friend of women, advancer of the rights of the fairer sex, Mary Madeline.
Look, that's not his argument.
The question is whether Donald Trump could be the president of the United States, and I think he's answered that
whatever
question.
Whatever women are experiencing in the workplace, I'm not discounting that, and I'm not defending him, but on radio today, 3 out of 4 voters said they will cast their vote based on health care. Their coverage their coverage has gone up, their premiums have doubled, their deductibles are skyrocketing, and their care has been cut in half. That's part of this underlying what's going on out there, and we're all talking about the Venezuela part and
maybe
everything.
Maybe this election has something to do with government?
You got that? People are worried about health care, and we're talking about a Venezuelan tart. A Venezuelan tart. Now, Alicia Machado is not and was not, until her name was mentioned, and even after her name was mentioned in the debate, a public figure. She had been a public figure when she was Miss Universe, but that, as Donald Trump is fond of saying, was 11 years ago. She has done what most other pageant winners do. She had disappeared into the fog of obscurity. But now, according to Mary Madeline, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Republican woman that she is, she's just a Venezuelan tart. See, that's the thing. Whether it's Tommy Lauren or Mary Madeline or Donald Trump, the GOP, the Republican Party, has deep and abiding problems with female sexuality, with female autonomy, with female employment, with females. Mike Pence insisted upon inserting the word forcible into a rape statute, as if there is ever a time when force is not an element of rape. The Republican Party has a woman problem because the Republican Party has a problem with women. A problem with women being something besides empty vessels who do the bidding and express the wishes of men whose natural place is to rule their lives. And just in case you're wondering, the apple, or in this case, the serpent strayeth not far from the hole. In this case, it's Eric Trump. That's probably the saddest thing out of all of this, is that Eric and the other Trump gets old man has passed his values on to them. Eric Trump is 32 years old. He will be wandering around this planet most likely for the full 70 and maybe then some. By way of excusing his father's rape conduct, he said, "I think that's Hillary going low. I think you've seen that for a long time. She'll dig out dirt on someone from 15 years ago when someone is in entertainment." So now that's the excuse. Oh, Daddy talked about committing rapes because he's in entertainment. You know, because everybody in entertainment talks about grabbing women by their genitals. Listen, my father apologized for it. He was right to apologize for it. And I'm glad he apologized for it. At the same time, if you look at her track record with women, it's horrible. Absolutely horrible. And then in talking to the Trump office staff, he said, "I think sometimes when guys are together, they get carried away. And sometimes that's what happens when alpha personalities are in the same presence." Billy Bush, alpha personality. Yeah, okay. Alpha personality, Billy Bush. Yeah, you know, we're all still, this is a variation on the all men are cavemen theme, which I reject, because it says that men can never be anything more than what they are. It's the same mindset that winds up with women having to walk around in beekeeper suits in repressive autocracies like Saudi Arabia and under the Taliban. Because, see, a man in those cultures can't help himself. He's just going to get all rapey if he sees so much as a naked square centimeter of ankle. And thus it is the woman's fault. Yeah, think about the Old Testament story of Samson. You know, there he was, perfectly decent little Jewish boy, until he fell under the wiles of Delilah. Uh-huh. And then she said that he'd look better with one of those modern metrosexual haircuts. And he let her. Now, it wasn't... Now, God, mind you, had previously said, listen, this guy's going to have special powers, Samson is, but he'll only have them as long as he doesn't cut his hair. So, Mama, don't worry about it if all the other little boys there in the village are calling him a sissy and stuff when his hair gets down past his shoulder blades. You don't cut his hair because he'll get them when he grows up. Sinners in the hands of a capricious God. What kind of God does that? I'm going to make you really strong, kid, as long as you don't get a haircut. Everybody had long hair. Well, I mean, except the Egyptians. The Egyptians shaved their heads to keep back the lice, but, you know, the rest of the cultures, well, lice are something you live with. It's a dirty place. It's a desert. What do you want? But see, it was Delilah's fault. Everything could have been just fine. But no, Delilah wanted to give him some product. Delilah wanted to style his hair. Delilah wanted to get him some mousse. Well, not mousse, probably more like, goat grease, but you get the idea. But it's just, when alpha personalities are in the same presence, you know, they're gonna talk about women's genitals a lot. And here's the fun part. The Republican Party has no idea they have this problem. They are, as Tommy Lauren pointed out, shocked to find out that Donald Trump was saying things out loud in front of a microphone that they themselves talk about all the time. You know, or at least the ones of them who aren't getting, you know, busted for trying to pick up little boys and have sex with them. But, you know, because women. So that's the filibobster. A few emails coming in. Note coming from Robert in Australia. Bob, back in the 1970s, there was a British sitcom called Are You Being Served? It was set in a department store at a time when department stores had staff who would actually serve customers. Yeah, I remember that. Mrs. Slocum was head of the ladies' department. Mrs. Slocum owned a cat. Whenever the staff had to stay back after work for a meeting, Mrs. Slocum would say, "But what about my pussy?" It always got a laugh. It was a running gag that ran for 10 years and a movie. Trump's remarks are extremely offensive, but I don't understand why people won't say pussy when reporting them. Because they have tender and delicate fifis over at the for-profit media. And they don't want to be perceived as being as dirty as Donald Trump. And see, this is another manifestation of the overall hypocrisy that goes with all of this. There is clip after clip after clip now of various and sundry practitioners of for-profit media trying every way they know how not to say that word. even though it's journalistically appropriate because it is a quote. But then to drill down to another layer, is it just language that we come up with so many euphemisms for female genitalia? And I guess at least a comparable number for male genitalia? Is that just the creativity of language? Or does it reflect a fascination, perhaps unhealthy, with sexual function? Think about it. When a male makes a terrible mistake, he can be said, and oddly enough, it's Southern American English, which has a great deal of color to it, which is, of course, steeped in the Calvinist tradition of sexual repression. And a lot of it comes from rural roots, or our agrarian roots. When a guy makes a terrible mistake, he will be said to have really stepped on his dick. This is not a matter of complimenting the guy for having a really big penis or long penis. This is to say that he has done something that is causing himself a great deal of pain. And the back reference is to a donkey. Why do we have such linguistic color around genitalia? And if I may observe just for a moment, the original offensive statement by Trump was new to me. It really was. I haven't lived some sort of sheltered life. But grab them by the pussy is not something that I recall ever having heard before. Because it just doesn't work. The verb grab doesn't work linguistically as an expression of the concept of to grasp. Maybe that's just me. Maybe there's some corner of it. Maybe it's a thing from New York City. Maybe people talk about grabbing. Yeah, I know. Steve pointing out by emails, I thought he had the best words. Not in this case, no. James with a note, both sides do it. Both sides are equally at fault, Bob. Right, yeah. That's the whole Mary Madeline thing. From another member of the fraternity of Steve, Tommy Lauren, under the subject line, girl talk. Tommy is what happens when you let someone who barely got their GED start broadcasting every stray and unconsidered opinion that comes to mind, what passes for mind, anyway. And doesn't she sound like the sort of old-school airhead who would be right at home espousing her political position over the pink princess phone, painting her pointed little toenails a bright red, of course? Well, we live in far stupider times, I guess. Yeah, Steve in China. Trump, according to Jim, reminds one of A.J. Maggot in The Dirty Dozen, who was purifying those sluts. Clarence, under the subject, Trump the plant. I'm thinking Alex Jones conspiracy in reverse. Trump has to be helping HRC to win this election. The Clinton machine has hired Trump to destroy the GOP. This is payback for all the harassment and agitation the GOP has inflicted on the Clintons. If there's any truth in my theory, it is classic Hitchcock or Twilight Zone. That's an idea that will not go away, Clarence. That we're witnessing an act on the Carnival Midway. But the stakes are too high. And the fear now is that Democrats will go, well, she's got it. We'll just stay home now. And we'll all wake up November 9th to President Trump, who will then instruct his attorney general to get to work on his political enemies list. Remember enemies lists? Remember Richard Nixon? Because I do. Yeah. Eesh. So, yeah, we try to raise $200 every evening. We are at zero for this evening. And hopefully it won't stay that way. Try to raise $200, 10 at 20, etc. If you want to help keep all this going, run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute, and do the PayPal thing. Or just fill out the information and then click Credit Card instead of PayPal. And you don't have to have a PayPal address. That was tested several times last night by a number of different members of the Horn family community congregation. Mm-hmm. You know how to reach the program if you want to engage in conversation. 304-574-8178. Or via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. And, of course, the stress line. 304-663-4676. We'll take a break and come back. This is listener-supported, emphasis on the listener-supported part, Conversation Radio. This is The Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yeah. It's Tuesday, October 11, 2016.
I have a comprehensive energy policy, but it really does include fighting climate change.
Climate change shows up at a presidential debate.
Energy is under siege by the Obama administration, under absolute siege.
But not for long. Plus,
North Carolina is in a state of emergency. 1,400 rescues in 24 hours. Some levees can't hold back all the water, and rivers are rising.
Global warming-fueled Hurricane Matthew leaves death and destruction in its wake.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We are, however, producing a lot of natural gas.
Hey, keep it to yourself, lady. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, major hurricane sweeps through the Caribbean, kills hundreds down there, moves up through four or five states in the U.S., kills more than 20 at this point, and yet, just a day or two later, we have a presidential debate, and once again, there are no questions about climate change.
That's right. Hurricane Matthew and climate change were pretty much lost in this very bizarre election season. But just to update, Hurricane Matthew has killed at least 26 people as of airtime in the United States. More than 1,400 people in North Carolina alone had to be rescued after Matthew dumped 15 inches of rain in 24 hours in some areas, caused record flooding and record storm surge from North Florida to North Carolina. It was much worse in Haiti, over 1,000 deaths so far, and possibly a new epidemic of cholera. Now, the exact influence of climate change on Hurricane Matthew's intensity will take time to determine, but climate scientists and meteorologists are already saying that Matthew was turbocharged by record atmospheric moisture, 10 to 15% above normal, and record warm ocean temperatures, plus storm surge that was boosted by rising sea levels, all fingerprints of climate change.
Other than that, nothing to talk about at a presidential debate.
Yeah, not a single question was asked by either of the debate moderators or the audience members at the second presidential debate in St. Louis. However, an audience member did ask about energy policy. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump repeated his false claim that the Environmental Protection Agency, rather than the competition from natural gas, is behind the global decline of the coal industry.
Now, I'm all for alternative forms of energy, including wind, including solar, etc. But we need much more than wind and solar. There is a thing called clean coal.
EPA
is so restrictive that they are putting our energy companies out of business.
Not all energy companies. Solar and wind companies are booming in the United States.
And in a good way, not in the way that oil companies tend to be booming and killing people when they do.
A little fact check here. Clean coal is an oxymoron that refers to one pilot plant in the United States that captures carbon emissions from coal, but is unfinished, behind schedule, and astronomically over budget. The U.S. natural gas boom killed coal in the United States. Trump is a climate science denier, and his call for more fossil fuel extraction would be disastrous for the climate and ignores the popularity of solar and wind with the vast majority of Americans.
Facts check.
For her part, Democratic presidential candidate, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was forced once again to be the only one to bring up climate change on her own. She praised the U.S. oil and gas boom, however, and doubled down on the Obama administration's policy of calling natural gas a bridge fuel.
We are, however, producing a lot of natural gas, which serves as a bridge to more renewable fuels. So I have a comprehensive energy policy, but it really does include fighting climate change because I think that is a serious problem. And I support moving toward more clean renewable energy as quickly as we can because I think we can be the 21st century clean energy superpower.
Now, a bit of a fact check here. While it is true that the glut of cheap natural gas has succeeded in reducing U.S. emissions by displacing coal, the fracking boom has had steep environmental costs for water supplies and local communities. Spending on natural gas infrastructure displaces spending on renewable energy infrastructure. And scientists warn that needs to be ramped up rapidly to make up for lost time if we're to avoid the worst climate impacts.
And it should be noted, because we will hear it from opponents of Hillary Clinton, she was a big proponent of fracking during her time as Secretary of State.
Yes, she did promote the Obama administration's official position abroad of promoting U.S. natural gas fracking technology. Clinton also made sure that viewers heard that she, unlike Trump or the Republican Party, has a detailed plan to help coal country transition away from the coal industry and its decades of environmental destruction, probably the first time most Americans heard of it. Polls show that even though Americans are still deeply divided on climate science along partisan lines, the majority do accept that climate change is happening and want government action. And, of course, everybody loves renewable energy.
Well, maybe Fox News' Chris Wallace will ask about climate change at the final presidential debate.
Yeah,
I couldn't even get through the sentence without laughing. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Make them laugh, make them laugh. Don't you know everyone wants to laugh? My dad said be an actor, my son. But be a comical one, they'll be standing in line.
Sorry about the scream there. But that phrase, and let me reiterate, you can say pussy all day long and I'm not gonna, it might be coarse, you know, but we got lots of coarse words. It's the idea of it, it's the grabbing part, it's the sexual assault part that is so deeply fucking offensive, okay? And it's, but on the other hand, clean coal makes me crazy at the mere mention, because it's a shorthand for, you know, let's all ourselves, if you know what I mean. Yeah. Oh, thank you very kindly to Bob in Texas. Bob has put a $100 challenge on the table, a matching challenge. If we can find, and thank you very kindly, Frank. That $100 challenge is now an $80 challenge, 80 more dollars, and it will be doubled courtesy of Bob in Texas, and we'll be done with fundraising for the evening, which will be freaking awesome. Okay, can we do that, please? Thanks, Frank. Thank you very kindly. And let's go over to the Skype line and check in with Punky and Scott. What's happening?
Hello.
There you are. Are we on a 7-second delay in San Diego?
No. What's happening is I got to get the phone out of my T-shirt pocket and find the unmute button on the Skype application that runs on the phone. Punky's upset because he said, you missed your cue.
Hey, well, I mean, I thought maybe Punky may be running the delay or something in case, or maybe you were, in case he tweeted out something, you know, offensive.
Well, see, the problem with Punky running anything electronic, especially if it's a control board of any sort, he was okay in those times when I had what's known as slider pots. But he cannot negotiate rotary pots. There's just
no. I can see how those would be tough for a bird.
Getting those little birdie claws, gaining purchase on those rotary pots is a bit of a challenge for old Punky Dunk. But anyway, I was looking on my calendar of things coming up, and one of them is the final presidential debate on Wednesday, the 19th of October.
Otherwise known as the Chris Wallace, Donald gets a pass, oh my God, Benghazi email debate.
Maybe, but then again, maybe not. Now let's look at it. Okay, it's going to be in Las Vegas, which I've never been there, and I doubt that I would ever go even if someone took me or paid my way and put me up in a fancy hotel, because there's something about the vibe of that place, just from what I know of it, that it doesn't work for me. Just the what do you call it? The premise on which Las Vegas is based doesn't work for me. And that's just me. I mean, the place could be perfectly fine. They say it has more churches than most comparable size towns. But
I would not be surprised for a couple of reasons. One, people who win will often try to stave off the lightning bolt by going and dropping a little change in the collection plate. Yeah. And people who have been reduced to poverty at the tables will then go to church and pray for God to give them enough money to go and place one more bet so they can get it all back on a single roll.
Yeah. Well, perhaps the best positive thing that can be said for Vegas is I imagine their pawn shops have got to be jam-packed with all manner of goodies, since people who lose a lot at casinos will sell whatever they have or pawn whatever they have to generate some more cash to get even, so to speak. But then, as we all know, they don't get even. They're sent home on a bus if they can get out of there at all. And the stuff falls out of pawn and makes for excellent bargains for people who patronize pawn shops in Vegas, I'm guessing. Again, I've never been there. But okay, so Trump will have some advantage in Vegas. I thought initially, as you did, that he might have some advantage with Chris Wallace, the Fox anchor, as host. But let's look at it more closely. He is coming down faster than the Hindenburg, in my estimation. I know that we kind of differ on this. And I don't mean to be complacent, and I'm not. I won't end my efforts for a Democratic win in November until after all the votes are counted, and even then I may not give up, okay? But that being said, the established consensus, even in the precincts of some Republicans, is his campaign is imploding in a manner not inconsistent with the Hindenburg, okay? Now, if that is so, even to some extent, you got to look at Chris Wallace, who I tend to think is he's not a teabagger, okay? He's of the more George W. and George Herbert W. Bush, Dick Cheney mindset of establishment Republicans. This would be Chris Wallace we're talking about, who's going to moderate. These people know which side of the bread is dry and which side of the bread has butter on it, okay? So he's going to have to show impartiality as a moderator of the debate, but at the same time, he knows what's what and who's who, and he might be thinking, and his overseers at Fox might be thinking, that, hey, we gotta be somewhat nicer than we would ordinarily be to Hillary, simply because it may be in the cards that she wins, and we'll have to depend on her to at least some extent to have something to talk about.
I think your analysis is largely correct insofar as he's a Republican from the Dick Cheney wing of the Republican Party.
Yeah.
Which is pretty disgusting and dangerous in its own right. But, because there's just too much, past as prologue there of the Hillary Benghazi email itis for us to think that it's going to be anything resembling fair or balanced.
No, I'm not even sure that I expect it to be. I'm just saying that these people look ahead a couple of steps, and they kind of saw Trump coming in the sense that as meekly and weakly as any of them may have done, they tried to warn against him during the primary process, but they allowed people to vote. The people, as demented as they are, had spoken. He is the nominee. So at least make a show of being okay with him, knowing full well It's almost like when people kept asking Lyndon Johnson when he was president why he would not fire J. Edgar Hoover, who was his neighbor and friend for many years in Washington, Johnson said something to the effect, "I'd rather have him inside the tent pissing out than outside the tent pissing in." And that old expression fits this conversation somehow. I'm not sure whether it's about Hillary or about Trump. Could be about both of them. I don't know. But I think they, you know, it's, I often quote the noted philosopher Red Fox to describe the situation that the Republicans are in this time around. And Red Fox once noted, when you can see the when you can read the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet. And that's pretty much where they are. And I think on some level, some of them know it. And I think they will behave accordingly. Well, I could be wrong. You know, there is always...
You know where I come from. You'll never go broke under underestimating the moral bankrupt... You'll never go broke estimating the moral bankruptcy of the Republican Party. Let's leave the over-under for the guys in Vegas.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I get that. Believe me, God knows. I've done battle with these asshats for many, many moons in one way or another. And I know what they're up to, you know, and you have to compliment them in a sense on the way that you know that Roger Ailes had something to do with Trump's performance in the second debate. I waited for Trump stalking Hillary around the stage the other night to channel the voice of Lurch, the butler, the big, tall, hulking butler.
Yeah.
On the Addams Family, you know, God, it was creepier than shit. I started freaking out over it, and I'm not a woman, okay?
And a number of women did watch it and go, ew!
Oh, and you know that it was from the book, Roger Ailes' book of debate mindfuck techniques, you know, to try to unnerve Hillary and upset her.
Oh, no, something straight out of a horror movie where the little white girl's not supposed to go into the basement.
Well, yeah. But I would have, see, and you know that she wants to take the higher road, but I would have been sorely tempted if I had been Hillary Clinton. When he got to a certain point behind her, I would have interrupted my answer, whipped around and said, look, look, you so-and-so. If you don't back off, I'm going to knee you right in your tiny
No. It's got to be more zen than that, Scott. She just swings around and goes, boo!
Well, yeah.
And, you know, he may have had a coronary and our problems would have been solved.
Well, maybe from your mouth to God's ears, if God's even listening at this point. If there is a God to...
No, God's too busy making the odds on high school football games.
Jeez. But anyway, that was my two cents on the upcoming debate. I don't expect much from Chris Wallace, but then again, never lose your capacity to be pleasantly surprised, you know?
We'll all tune into it, I'm sure. What?
a week from this coming Wednesday, who knows what can happen?
And that was my next question. The 19th is on Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, that's what? Today's Tuesday, so it's a week and a day, more or less. That's an eternity in presidential politics. Okay, maybe not an eternity, but it's more than what you would consider 8 days because of the way things are moving and the craziness, the bizarre nature of this 2016 election cycle has been one for the books. But there's every good reason to think, barring anything unforeseen, that things will have further deteriorated for Trump in the intervening 8 days before the final debate, that Chris Wallace will huddle with his honchos at Fox News and say, you know, as Red Fox says, we can see the handwriting on the wall and we are in the toilet. We'll have to do.
Maybe it changes a little bit. with Roger Ailes being gone. But then again, maybe his dead hand is still writing many Takealoh Farson on the wall in Chris Wallace's office. I don't know.
Well, it remains to be seen how it ultimately plays out. But I can't help but think, given what we know about Trump, given what we know, have you ever seen a rat that has been cornered, an actual rat that's been cornered in an alley or something?
Yeah, and a possum.
Okay, yeah, possums too. They will rear up, some of them, on their hind legs and will put up as much of a fight as you would expect. Or maybe you'd be surprised at the fight that some of them will put up when cornered. And that's where Trump is, I think. He is, his back is against the proverbial wall. And we've already seen what he does when it even looks like to him that his back is up against the wall. So I'm not putting real money on any of this because of the unpredictability of it all. But I would like to think that things will stay somewhat consistent. He'll fall further in the esteem and estimation of a lot of Republicans. There's some of his followers, no matter what happens, they're sticking with him. And, you know, you figure that into the equation. I mean, there was a thing I posted on Facebook earlier. I think it was from The Nation. You know, should we try to talk some sense into the Trump supporters was the gist of the article.
Talk about pearls before swine.
Well, yeah. I mean, you might get a few of them to reconsider their position, but by and large, it's an extremely
no. Okay, well, let me give you a little example from here in West Trump, Virginia.
Yeah.
So we've had over the last year or so, we've had a lot of work going on the New River Gorge Bridge, and it had to happen in time for the work to be finished before Bridge Day, which is this coming Saturday. There will be 100,000 people out on that bridge, suspended 876 feet via a single arch over the New River Gorge. And so that work has been going on, and it's been completed, but there's still a little bit of cleaning up left. So there's one of those highway advisory signs. You know what I'm talking about? The digital signs?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it got hacked. The sign got hacked. And for a while, because an intrepid West Virginian caught it, and I believe this to be true, it reads, if you don't vote Trump, and don't vote is all one line spelled D-O-N-T-V-O-T.
Yeah.
And then it changes screens. If you don't vote Trump, fuck you. So I think any suggestion that any of the Trumpanzees are going to be no. What Trump said was true. For his hardcores, he could murder somebody in the middle of the road, and they'd say, "Well, you know, Hillary got to kill Vince Foster. Why can't he?"
Yeah,
why can't he kill somebody?
I do get that, Bob. But there may be a few who weren't all that sold on him to begin with who will see the error of their ways. Like I sent you a...
Like Ted Cruz?
Nah, that's another story. I don't even want to get into Smiling Ted. I sent you a thing earlier that I saw online. Trump apparently picked something called the Faith Council, which were his contingent of religious evangelical advisors. And even one of his hand-picked Faith Council members has finally seen the light and is calling him out on his nonsense. And you can read up on that because I included the link in the email. Maybe save that for if you're... Well, you're not going to be there tomorrow.
Well, I hope I will be. I just don't know. That was just a caveat. I may not be here, but I plan on being here. No, I saw the story.
Yeah.
But the problem is, for every one of those, there's a Robert Jeffress of the First Baptist Church in Dallas who said, I think Donald Trump redeemed himself politically last night. He did exactly what he needed to do. He's talking about at the debate. He did exactly what he needed to do. He apologized for his comments and quickly pivoted.
You know, what, speaking of the First Baptist Church of Dallas, and I'm not even sure how I know this, but once upon a time, maybe 25, 30 years ago, even more, the pastor of that church was a man named Dr. W.A. Criswell.
Oh, yes.
One wonders where Dr. Criswell would be on the matter of Trump. Because he was a fire and brimstone preacher, as I recall, and he did not brook much in the way of fornicating or divorcing or any of those other nasty things that they would rant and rail against in the Baptist church back then. Even more so now. I mean, a lot of these so-called hard-shell Baptists today would be looked upon as heathens, not quite heathens, but bordering on unbelief in the minds of some of these old-time Baptists and Pentecostals and holiness church people, you know, all that stuff. So one wonders. But, yeah, there's always going to be his teabaggers, Trump's teabaggers. But there are a few people who may not have been all that sold to begin with. And to the extent that their minds can be changed and that they can see the light, more power to them, you know? It's like that old Baptist guy was 98 years old on his deathbed, and he called the local priest and said, Father, I want to convert from the Free Will Baptist Church to the Holy Roman Catholic Church. And his deacons and ushers and all got wind of it, the old Baptist fella. And they rallied around the brother's bedside and said, why, after many, many years as a good, upstanding, faithful Baptist, have you converted to that heathen, Babylonian, Roman Catholic apostasy church? And he said, well, brothers, I know my time is near, and I would rather it be one less of them than one less of us. You know, so, you know, the Trumpsters who can change their mind and rub a few brain cells together, more power to them. I'm glad to have them out of his camp and maybe nudging their nose under the tent into ours.
Well, you kill the fatted calf for the return of the prodigal son, I guess. God, we just can't get away from the biblical analogies this evening, can we?
Amen. But
wrong day.
Anyway, I thought I'd run that by you just to see what you would think, and you thought pretty much what I thought you would think. So.
Well, that means I'm predictable.
No, you're not predictable. You're just consistent, and wisely so, Bob. I mean,
damn it, I'm consistently predictable.
No, not consistently predictable. You are consistent in your thinking. In that you don't want us to slough off in these final weeks. You don't want us to become complacent and overconfident.
Well, the rule continues to apply, Scott. There are only two ways to run a race: unopposed and scared to death.
Yeah, and we should be scared to death in a sense, okay? It ain't over till it's over, and even when it's over, as we learned in 2000, it still ain't over.
Not by a long shot. Scott, good talking to you, and tell Punky I was glad to hear from him, too.
Okay, and I'll tutor him on the Rotary Pod.
I was going to say, we'll get him a cockatiel-sized Rotary Gates board model and let him
there
work on it. Maybe if he grabbed it with his claws and flapped real hard in a certain, and you know, tilted and... You know, pitch and gyre and right. Scott, take care.
Okay, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Scott and Punky in San Diego. And meanwhile, over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello. 702 area code. Are you there? No, because Bluetooth dropped you. Stand by, call back, and we'll get the Bluetooth to cooperate again. That's twice in two nights. God damn it. And I don't know. But... Oi. Yeah. Well, meanwhile, let's go out to the Great Midwest and check in with Laurel. Hey, what's happening?
Oh, not a whole lot. Just trying to recoup from this double blitz of bronchitis and flu. Yeah. I think I spent 15 minutes in my bed last night thinking I was going to die. And there's LT. He says hi.
Oh, hey, little thunder.
Spent another 15 minutes in bed hoping I would die. But thankfully, this little fella here has a good bedside humor. He made sure not to jump on me too many times during my agony.
That's helpful.
Yes, you are always playful. What do you got to say for Bob today? Got to say anything for Bob today? Huh? You're trying to crawl on my lap. This guy thinks he's a hundred pound lap dog. So
no, I still thinks he's a 2 pound puppy.
Yes, you do. You still think you're a 2 pound puppy? Got anything to say? Yeah. You do.
Yeah.
Really? I thought so.
I'll bet Punky's in complete agreement.
Mm-hmm. He's pretty feisty because, like I said, I'm not in very good, humor to walk him today. So he's got lots of pent up puppy energy today. So it's been basically watching him race around the yard, playing with the neighbor dogs, and bringing him in here and watching him bounce off the walls. So
yeah, it could be a little rough.
But anyway, I've been perusing Facebook during my sick day here, and I'm coming across some. Pro-Trump post. There's a post here I'm reading from this Dr. Brown fellow saying, sorry, with the two couples talking together, saying, sorry, we hate Hillary too, but we won't give our principles for Trump. We'll vote third party even if we know we can't win. And the other couple says, well, that's fine. When your kids ask America how America became a police state, you just tell them that enabling Hillary to appoint Supreme Court leftists who erased the 1st, 2nd, 4th, 5th, and 10th Amendments met with your principles. And if that's not disturbing enough, I'm reading this
post. Oh, sweet Jesus.
And that's not disturbing enough, I'm reading the post because it was shared on my Facebook page by my older sister and my eldest brother. All five of my brothers and my older sisters are going to vote for Trump. Okay. And this Dr. Brown fellow is a peach, too. He's got another post today celebrating Yom Kippur, praying that the Jews come around and accept Jesus, as for their atonement, I guess. But who knows? It's a crazy world we live in.
Well, they damn well better, because otherwise, come that great getting up morning, there's going to be a big Jew gigging going on, of course. The evangelicals are kind of looking forward to that, too.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely. I mean, what can you do? I mean, he's the ideal Christian, and the Christians are saying it themselves. How do you argue with that? I'm coming to the conclusion that when Christians are saying we're called to be like Christ, I'm thinking, gee, maybe I should start grabbing hooch. Maybe they'll think of me as being Christ-like. I don't know. It feels like I'm walking through an alternate universe. It really, really does.
So, are your siblings all voting in Minnesota? Or?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. So I can kind of rest assured that's not going to cause too much damage. But
at least they're not in Ohio or Florida or.
No, I'm. That said, I'm still not taking any chances. I'm voting for the devil herself. I'm not going to take any chances even here in Minnesota.
Oh no, it's just, no. And more and more people are coming around to that. I mean, I know that there are people out there who think that somehow Jill's going to get 5% and that'll open the doors to federal funding and the unicorn cavalry will be in full its full glory come 2020, and it ain't gonna happen. And you know what? If you've got the federal funding, it's not gonna win much, because this is still very much a money driven system. Citizens United has not been repealed.
No, and it's not gonna be for quite a while.
And let's, please, Laurel, let's remember that even if Citizens United were to be struck down by the Supreme Court, then we go back to a political system that was still, what? Oh, money-based. Yeah. And where are the billionaires? And I'm sorry, they this is their show, okay? I don't like it, but I have to live in reality world. Where are the billionaires who are going to get behind, you know, Jill Stein?
Yeah.
I was reading a story earlier today about how Hillary and Trump were both given the national security briefings, and they were perfectly willing to give one to Jill Stein too, but instead of going to Washington D.C., she went to Washington, P.A.
it's so hard to figure out these people. I mean, you know, you can't really discuss anything with a Trump voter. I mean, I was, you know, I mentioned to you on my Skype, on our Skype chat a little earlier ago, you know, I'm not so much a Vegas person, but I do work as a blackjack dealer. And, you know, some of my best friends, you know, working the tables are downright blood red Trump supporters. And heck, I had a older lady with the, you know, chain smoker blowing my face all day, tipping me like it's going out of style, so I have to sit there and smile about it all day. But, you know, she was just going on about how Trump was just cleaning up the floor with Hillary, and it's like, hey, thanks for the tips, you know. it's a fine line you walk working the hospitality industry, it really
is. Oh, yeah, but you stand there and nod a lot, right?
Mm-hmm. it gets to be really interesting at times. Trust me, it's... I've got this one, you know, common customer. He'll come in and he'll, if I'm dealing one of a slower game, maybe a slower poker game, he'll take, you know, wait his turn while reading a Bill O'Reilly book or a Charles Krauthammer book. It's like, okay, this is the loudest library I've ever seen, you know. But you got to keep yourself entertained somehow.
Oh my God! I couldn't sit at that table. So I got to ask you, what kind of steaks do you deal with?
You know, it's your typical cornfield casino. I mean, I can deal, you know, $3 blackjack, $5 blackjack, all the way up to dealing out Mississippi stud hands where a gentleman wins $12,000 and stuff. So. I mean, it's not high stakes.
So are the I mean, but are the days of the dollar blackjack table just gone?
You'll find them some places. Like I said, I've never been to Vegas myself. I'm not necessarily a gambler by nature. You know, I'm too much. I've got too much Scotch blood in me to worry about, you know, throwing my own, you know, lug nuts for pennies around. But you know, it's kind of gone pretty passe. You know.
Yeah.
It's hard to find those.
Cornfield casino. I'd never heard that phrase before.
Basically, you know, you drive around in the Midwest, and you're going to run into these nice, beautiful-looking resort casinos that will pop up every 50, 100, 150 miles or so, where, you know, it's a beautiful casino just surrounded by cornfields and wheat fields. And,
are these tribal casinos?
No,
or
mine? The one I work at is actually, no, not owned by natives. It's, you know, it's a corporate owned company. There are a couple other casinos that are within that same company. And, you know, they run a pretty decent operation. I'm not going to speak badly of them, obviously. You know, it's a nice work environment, good benefits. And, you know,
well, you know, I think you're the second of our correspondence from Casino Life, of course. You know, Carol's out there in Vegas, and he has long experience with the wagering mindset.
You know, and granted, I haven't been a lifelong casino worker. I worked in the with the disabled for about 20 years before I came to the casino life. And, you know, I loved working with the disabled. Unfortunately, you know, money situation was getting such that, you know, you can't keep a roof over your head making $8.90 an hour. It just, you know, I was working 60, 70 hours a week between three jobs, and my body started falling apart, and I was getting eviction notices. So, you know, I had to find something that paid a little bit more. And
yeah, like,
you know,
social worker is the least remunerative professional degree in the country, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when I was at my last job, the group home I was working at, my supervisor had a second job and her supervisor had two second jobs. So, you know, it's not something you can do, you know, just, you know, on the, you know, to support a family, you know, unless you're, you know, unless you're clearly doing a lot of other things. But, you know, I hit 40 and 40 hit back a few years ago. So I just, it's not, you know, I'm just not that young enough to be able to juggle all that, you know, all American three job sort of thing anymore. So, you know, I'll deal out my 7-car 21s for tips any day, you know. You know, it's true how it makes me feel morally.
Right. But look, I have a hard time working up a moral objection to gambling simply because we can either do it and regulate it or we can do it and let the mob run it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Which is kind of the same thing with the drug trade, but that's a separate conversation.
You know, I'm not a cannabis smoker either. I mean, with my bronchitis that I get and my asthma that I get every month or 6 weeks or so, I couldn't be, you know, I couldn't live with a smoker, let alone smoke myself. You know, I basically have the signpost on my door, no smoking, please. It's like, you know, I haven't.
Because I dig breathing, right?
Yeah, I really dig breathing. You know, but anyway, I was talking with another younger lady, not my sister, but another young lady at work that was a fervent Trump supporter. And I told her, hey, look, I don't care much for Hillary, too. I either. I trust her about as far as I can throw her. But then again, that's politics. I can say the same for basically every president that served in my lifetime. And that goes all the way back to Tricky Dick Nixon. But there's a pretty wide gap of difference between being untrustworthy and blowing the whole goddamn world up.
Well, it is an interesting election season, Laurel, because on the one hand, you got a lot of people who don't believe Hillary, and that's what puts them off Hillary. They don't believe she's sincere about what she says. On the other hand, we have a Republican nominee in Donald Trump, and I damned well do believe him. I believe every word he says. And I believe he would die trying to accomplish everything he said. Get rid of the EPA, if not get rid of it, tie its hands sufficiently to keep it from being able to actually serve anything resembling its statutorily mandated function. You know, the man is stupid enough to try to build a wall. And anybody who says that he wants to incarcerate 11.5 million people, you better take him at his word, because history is full of people who were ignored under such circumstances, and the regret and the agony that flowed from that ignorance it reverberates down to us in the present day.
Yeah, but it's so hard to get. It's so hard to wrap your mind around it, because you're right. You have to take these people at their word. I just, you know,
I mean, I don't know if you realize it, but Hillary had a big speech today in Miami, and it was kind of unique, Laurel, because she dedicated the entire speech to climate change. Because, see, we can't talk about during the pageants. Yeah, see?
Exactly.
So she brought Al Gore with her into Miami, and they talked about climate change. And that there's a pretty broad gulf between she acknowledges climate change and Donald Trump doesn't. And the cost of It's one of those Pascal's wager kind of things. There's no great loss if it turns out climate change is a great hoax, which it isn't.
No.
But there is a tremendous potential for harm if we buy into the notion that it isn't real, and it is.
Well, think of the potential harm that's going to happen once methane-driven... Think of the potential harm that's going to happen once methane-driven climate change folds up our global agricultural system like a cheap tent, and people like Trump, people like the Koch start looking around and thinking to themselves, okay, we can't possibly feed 7 billion mouths now. Which mouths do we feed and which mouths don't we feed?
Hello, Dr. Malthus. Yes. I can tell the LT damn sure wants to make sure, damn well wants to make sure he's one of the mouths getting fed.
He's going to be one of the mouths getting fed.
One of the things that Hillary brought up in her speech today, which I find encouraging, is that by the end of her first 4 years, she wants to see 500 million solar panels installed all across the United States. That is extremely ambitious for this country.
I wish I could afford solar panels.
Well, under the plan that she would like to advance, maybe there would be subsidies to make it possible for you to do that. Of course, this requires a cooperative Congress too.
You know, and keep in mind, it's not like I live right next door to work. I drive through three states to get to work. I'm driving 400 miles a day. Believe me, I would love to be able to drive a fuel efficient car or an energy efficient car.
You need a Chevy Volt.
Exactly. You know, it's 40 miles one way, and over the course of a full time job, that adds up in a big hurry.
Oh yeah.
And this is rural America. You know, this is rural, small-town America where you have to go 10, 15 miles to get to any Wally World or whatever, and there's no public transportation for that. You know, you've got a senior citizen bus that might go from here to the county seat every couple hours, but that's about it. You know, it's not like we can rely on, you know, city busing to get us to and fro around here. You know.
Yeah, the same thing obtains here. Absolutely.
Exactly. I mean, you know, trust me, if I could afford a Chevy Volt, if I could afford, you know, those Tesla cars, believe me, I'd be the first one lining up in line, you know. It's just that, you know, you kind of need several thousand dollars spending cash lying around, and that's not something that's possible in this economy for most people. You know, when you consider the number of people in this country that are one or two missed paychecks away from financial cataclysm, that's telling me there's not a lot of, you know, reserve cash sitting around for expenditures like that. And that's the part that worries me about, you know, new energy and new technology. You've got to have a viable market for it. And that, you know, it takes people that have the capital willing, you know, that is ready to spend into that market.
Right. Well, look, you know, in the during the Roosevelt administration, we had the REA, the Rural Electrification Act. We could have that again with solar. It just requires a Congress that is serious about the job of government. This Congress is not. Hey, Laurel, I hope you get to feeling better real soon. Sounds like
no
LP's
problem.
Taking good care of you.
Like I said, he's quite the nurse. He's ready for, you know, he's ready for all the physical therapy I need. He's great for jumping on me and making sure to keep all that phlegm loose in my lungs. So,
phlegm. Right. Sounds like he's ready to take you for a walk.
He's ready to drag me for a couple of blocks. I don't know if I can make it more than four, but I'll see how many he can drag me for.
All right, Laurel,
you
have you have a good evening. Awfully good to hear from you, and we'll talk soon, okay?
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Bye now. That's Laurel calling from Southwest Minnesota. And yeah, I get it. 500 solar panels is not exactly going to the moon, but in this country at this time, it's about as ambitious as we can get. I remember when Barack Obama came into office and was talking about a massive increase in nationwide rail. That was when Scott Walker turned down all the free money and the Spanish rail car company that had already set up shop in Wisconsin said, "See ya! No sense in us being here if you're not going to be supportive of what it is we're doing." And remember, even though it's sort of
silly to mention this, there are the 2018 midterms. Sooner or later, we got to have relief from this Congress. It is the single thing that puts our future most at hazard. But yeah, subsidized solar, hell yeah. And it would be there's not even anything for the big power conglomerates to bitch about, because they get free electricity that they don't even have to pay for. Huh? Not a bad idea. No. Hey, let's go and check in with Michael in Madison. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Bob. How you doing today?
Hey, better than yesterday, I think.
Oh, that's good. I had quite a headache this afternoon, but it seems to be subsiding.
Ah, good. Maybe you stopped reading signposts, and that'll make the headache go away.
It could have been that. I don't know. I think I might need a new pair of glasses, actually. But,
ooh. Well, that really can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hadn't talked to you in a while, and I just enjoyed talking to you yesterday, but then I kind of got on a tear, and I kind of ended up talking at you, so...
Oh, no, you didn't. You did fine.
Well, I figured I'd give you a call back, because it's been a while.
Well, it has been, and one of the things I vicariously enjoy on your Facebook posts is your travels in and around the region at large in search of a decent glass of beer. And good music, and it seems like you do a pretty good job of finding both. Had any wonderful fermented malt beverage lately?
Yeah, I guess. I think of any in particular. Well, no, actually, yeah, the last beer I had was, let me get the bottle here. New Glarus does this what they call an R&D series.
Yeah.
Okay, it's like their research and development, beers, where they only release the bottles for one weekend. You have to go to the brewery, get in line, buy them, and once they're gone, they're gone. And some of these, there's a two-bottle limit, so inevitably I end up just kind of stockpiling them and saving them for a special occasion that never seems to happen. But... the other day, I did decide to crack one of them open. I think it was from last year, actually. It was a Brambleberry Bourbon Barrel.
Oh, that sounds like something fermented. You couldn't say after three or four of those.
Well, yeah. Fermented brown ale. It was pretty spectacular.
Was it a nut brown ale?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, any excuse.
But yeah, no, I remember what you're saying. I think it was last week about the IPAs, and I know what you mean. It's interesting for a while, but
well, yeah. After a while, there's only so many things you can do with a front end loader full of hops.
Yeah, yeah, I'm kind of lately. I tend to gravitate more for Kolsch or a coffee stout.
Well, are there many, because, you've got far better access to good craft beer up there than I do. Are there many people essaying a run at Kolsch?
Yeah, I've had a couple of good ones lately, but the names are escaping me. I'd have to pop open my beeradvocate.com account and refresh my memory.
See, I think Kolsch is going to be the next big thing.
It could be, yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know if it's just the ones I've had, but they're very just sort of refreshing.
That's the whole idea.
Okay. Then, yeah, that makes sense then.
I mean, not, they're not overly, they're not even as hopped as, say, a Pils.
Yeah.
But they have a crispness, a refreshing quality to them. I got to tell you, though, Chris in Germany, who sends me lots of beer porn, has given me reason to add something to my bucket list, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go to the Czech Republic. I want to go to a beer spa.
Oh, no, what is this?
Now, see, yeah. Your pink little ears perked right up, didn't they?
Yeah.
There are beer spas in the Czech Republic where you take a beer bath.
Oh, my God.
And they bring you beer to, you know, you bathe your insides and your outsides with beer. You drink beer while you're in the beer bath.
Nice.
A hot beer bath. And then they take you to another room. You know, you're wrapped in a sheet. And you lay down on a bed of hay with apparently some hops sprinkled into it. And you get all rubbed down while continuing to, once again, drink more beer. I mean,
is this real? Are you serious?
I'm serious. Okay, I got it. Okay, I'll go back through my conversations with Chris. I'll send you the article.
Okay.
You'll start saving your money. I know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you know, just start now. Get the Babbel Czech app on your smartphone and learn to say, you know, like Mark Twain said, you know, you can get through Germany as long as you can say Zweiglas. You know, two beers. No, it's real.
And these things are in Wisconsin.
Sooner or later there will be a beer spa. Okay, wait a minute. I'm getting the tattered purple robe with the frayed moon and stars on it out. I foresee a beer spa at New Glarus.
That's what I was thinking. Maybe I should have a talk with some of the folks there.
Because apparently it has taken off like gangbusters in the Czech Republic. And the thing is, according to the prices listed in these articles, Michael, you know, the really expensive highfalutin beer spa experience is $150. And it's hours long.
That's not bad.
The middle of the road one is $66. At that rate, I'm moving in for the weekend.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, and of course, I just, and you'll love this, 2 years in a row now, Chris has sent me video from one of the beer fests she attends, and at beer fests all over Germany, once the beer starts flowing and they get in a really good beer-drinking German mood, you know what they start doing?
What's that?
Singing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know what they sing? They sing Take Me Home Country Roads, Michael.
Oh, my God.
How do I not got to be there?
Do they know anything about West Virginia?
Not much. I mean.
Okay.
You know, I just want to be there and, you know.
Maybe they think it's a mythical place.
Well, it kind of is. Most of the South doesn't know that we ever you know, divested from Virginia.
Yeah.
I've told the story before about the neighbor lady I grew up next to. Every time we'd come up here on vacation, she'd say, "Y'all have a nice time in Virginia."
Nice.
Yeah. And you go down south and you say, you know, I'm from, they say, where are you from? You say West Virginia. They say, I got an aunt in Roanoke. And it's weird. The entire Confederacy has an aunt in Roanoke. Roanoke is comprised of nothing but matronly aunts of other southern people. But I think it would just be fun to be at one of these fests and have them crank up country, Take Me Home Country Roads, and have the lone hillbilly stand up and lift his glass.
Do they sing it in German or in English?
No, in English.
Oh, okay.
They sing it in better English than the drunk Mountaineer fans do at Mountaineer Field on game day.
Yeah, no, I kind of figured that, but I would, you know, because, you know, everybody in Germany is bilingual, but at least when I was there a long time ago, that's how it seemed. But I kind of figured it, they sang it in English, but I guess I was kind of secretly hoping they translated it, because I would like to hear that song sung in German.
Look, nothing's ever going to be as cool. You know what happened to 99 Luftballons when it got translated into English? The same thing's going to happen to Take Me Home Country Roads, Michael.
Sure.
Yeah, see, Brother Deacon Gerald has had a similar experience. He just said, they ask what town, and you say Charleston, and they ask, is that anywhere near Richmond? Yeah, just, you know, a couple of hundred miles north. Oh, dear God. Yeah. But, no, I think, get in on the ground floor. You start the beer spa, Michael.
That's what I was thinking.
Because, I mean, this program goes out to multiple Wisconsinians.
Oh, yeah. You know, you got the gears in my mind are working right now. There could be something in that.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But, okay, speaking of Wisconsin, though, you know, yesterday I was talking about the Bucket of Losers hoax.
Yes.
And I kind of thought maybe we were done with that, especially when you said you hadn't seen it. You know, you asked me to kind of explain it. This morning, while I'm ready for work, the local listening to local quote unquote progressive radio station in the morning, they have a guy who's kind of one of these quote unquote middle of the road, both sides do it kind of guys.
Of course.
Yeah, I listen anyway, but just because he sometimes talks about the local issues, so I try to keep up with what's going on in town. But he repeated the Bucket of Losers thing. I was getting ready to email him, but a caller called in and was like, that's been thoroughly debunked.
Well, thank heaven for that.
Yeah, and just for those who don't know what I'm talking about, there was a fake WikiLeaks email that even WikiLeaks said that didn't come from us, that claimed that Hillary had called Bernie supporters and I guess progressives in general a quote unquote bucket of losers.
Still makes me cringe every time I hear that said.
Well, I mean, it's an obvious construction that some hoax perpetrator came up with after they heard Basket of Deplorables. And I mean, to me, that it just, when I first saw that, it just, you know, makes my bullshit radar go off. But you know, you dig into it for about 30 seconds and you find Snopes declared it's false, and WikiLeaks themselves said that's, you know, to the extent that you trust WikiLeaks, which I'm not sure I do, but you know, they said it didn't come from us. And,
well, you know, there's another little thing going around out there, Michael, that touches on WikiLeaks. And this is sort of somewhat semi complex, but it's damned interesting. It's an interesting peek into the Russian attempt to monkey with this election.
Yeah.
So, you know, Sunday night, the WikiLeaks thing was raised, you know, first by Martha Raddatz asking about the whole public, private, blah, 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 nothing burger.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that, too, but we can, your thing first.
Okay, so Trump cites this email. And in the email from WikiLeaks, there's this story about how John Podesta is told by arch villain Sidney Blumenthal, and you have to when you say Sidney Blumenthal now. Blumenthal tells Podesta, and this is the quote, Clinton was in charge at the State Department and it failed to protect U.S. personnel at an American consulate in Libya. If the GOP wants to raise that as a talking point against her, it is legitimate. Ooh, damn, that sounds serious, doesn't it, Michael?
Sounds serious, but...
But it turns loose that the story was pushed by an outfit called Sputnik.
Okay.
Sputnik is a Russian online news service.
Okay, see, I didn't get a chance to read that story today. I saw that pop up, and I thought, is it still in orbit? But
well,
different
Sputnik. Enter Kurt Eichenwald, who writes for Newsweek. And Eichenwald read all of this, and he said, damn, that sounds familiar. And then he said, and then he wrote, well, it sounded familiar because I wrote it. And he said, the Russians were quoting two sentences from a 10,000-word piece I wrote for Newsweek, which Blumenthal had emailed to Podesta. There was no mistaking that Blumenthal was citing Newsweek. The magazine's name and citations for photographs appeared throughout the attached article. The Russians had carefully selected the "of course" paragraph, which mentions there were legitimate points of criticism regarding Clinton and Benghazi, all of which had been acknowledged in 9 reports about the attack by the former Secretary of State herself.
Oh, boy.
The piece is about the obscene politicization of the assault that killed 4 Americans, and the article slammed the Republican Benghazi Committee, which was engaged in a political show trial disguised as a congressional investigation, the 10th inquiry into the tragedy, Eichenwald writes. So then Eichenwald says, so how did Donald Trump end up advancing the same falsehood put out by Putin's mouthpiece? I mean, sure, infinite monkeys and infinite typewriters, one of them's going to do Hamlet, but both of them are going to, you see how kind of weird that is?
Yeah. Either infinite monkeys or, you know, he got a text from Putin.
Oh, I mean,
or something in between. I suppose there's a range of possibilities, yeah, in between.
Del Moose and Squirrel, we have their number. it's just so damn painful. God, one of the last night, the best laugh I got was the Donald humping the chair picture.
Oh, God. There's so many great memes about that.
It's
too
real. And, now, you know, if he'd just been looking down or being soft, but no, he's climaxing against the chair.
Well, see, now you know why he wanted to take, who was it, Nancy O'Dell or whoever he was trying to fuck. Now you know why he wanted to take her furniture shopping.
Oh, my God. Sexy time with a Chippendale and not a dancer, a fucking chair.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. So then today, earlier today, Agnes sends me a GIF. And it contains the quote about, I just have to kiss them.
Okay.
And it's the excerpt from Aliens where the monster is leaning close to Sigourney Weaver. And, you know, and she's screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a beautiful thing. And then we wrap it up by, you know, I mentioned, and you know, the electronic sign here, you know, if you don't vote for Trump, fuck you. And, you know, bang, you're on top of it. And I get the Idiocracy photo. If you don't smoke Tarleton's, fuck you.
Fuck you. Oh, man. I'm not sure. Is it Idiocracy here? Is it coming? I don't know.
Depends on where you are.
Yeah, I keep telling people, you know, I keep telling people, they keep mentioning, oh, 2016, it's Idiocracy. And I keep telling them to watch Look Who's Back. I know we've talked about that movie offline, online, but not on the air.
Right, off air. Off air, that's what we're looking for.
That's the word, off air.
Said the two English majors. Struggling.
Yeah. But yeah, there's the German title is Erst wieder da, but it's if it's still on Netflix, I think it is. It's called Look Who's Back, and it's about Hitler, and it's fiction, but it's about Hitler just suddenly, you know, magically appearing in modern day Germany, and it's about what happens after that. He kind of re-enters public life, and
I watched it almost entirely by accident. Ferg was watching it.
Okay.
And he was like, "Dad, you got to watch this. It's hilarious."
Yeah, it's hilarious and it's frightening. I mean, everybody I've showed it, I've told to watch it or watched it with, has just been like, "Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god."
And no spoilers. But, and I'm so ashamed. I'm deeply ashamed. And the dog.
Yeah.
And we'll just leave it at that.
We'll just leave it at that. And then don't forget, it was the dog video that brought him down.
Yeah.
It becomes more relevant every day. You know, so I keep telling people, no, you got to watch Look Who's Back. That's what's happening this year. Idiocracy is what happens next year if we fuck this up. But, yeah, Idiocracy is already here in some places, I suppose.
Well, I mean, don't we have empirical proof with my sign?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
If you don't vote for Trump, fuck you.
Yeah, he's using whoever hacked that, you know.
But then that raises the possibility that it was, what, an agent provocateur? Because, I mean, come on, we're back to the infinite monkeys and the infinite typewriters, Michael.
Yeah.
What are the odds? What are the odds that a Trumpanzee would hack a road sign?
Yeah.
And make it be a direct analog to a billboard from Idiocracy?
So now our conspiracy, it could be that Mike Judge, the producer of Idiocracy, hired somebody to hack that.
Oh, now we're running far afield.
Guerrilla marketing campaigns.
Going back to a previous topic, I got a note from Sylvia.
Okay.
Subject line: beer spa.
Oh boy.
Sylvia writes: I am of Czech derivation. You should organize a tour to the beer spa. Let's start Bob's Beer Spa Fund.
I'm in.
Okay, so we got Sylvia and Michael on the beers. Okay, so we're going to have to go and we're going to have to go and find out how much a round trip plane fare for two, because there's no way I'm not taking Agnes. Somebody's got to lead me back to the hotel after the beer spa. I get it on Saturday, and then she gets beer spa on Sunday. I don't think you can. I don't know. Maybe they're just that genial in the Czech Republic. We got to find out airfare, hotel accommodation, and beer spa cost.
Yeah,
I'm stoked.
Yeah, that sounds exciting.
So
I honestly didn't even imagine that there was something like that.
Oh, who would have?
Yeah,
I mean, no, you crawl out of that and you get done with the hops mattress and the massage and everything, and you just look up and you go, ready to go, God.
Yep.
I just had an update from Sparky, having folded space and become Man Cave, that Look Who's Back is not on Netflix.
Oh. It was last time I checked. But...
Well, if it's not on Netflix, then check on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's got to be somewhere. That's
well, have you seen Brain Dead?
No, what's that?
Oh, you must. You really must. That's Amazon Prime.
Okay.
A meteor arrives from space, comes to Earth in Siberia. The Smithsonian transports it to Washington, D.C., where it hatches. And millions of little alien bugs start crawling around through Washington, D.C. and entering people's ears.
Okay.
Where they then make them more politically polarized. Right-wingers become more right-wing. Democrats become, like, you know, Stein people. And Tony Shalhoub plays the drunken right-wing Republican senator who gets his brain infested by these alien bugs. And it, so far, it's only lasted for one season, but it is a damn fun binge watch. Because the best part of it is that nobody's looking up and going, wow, these Republicans sure are behaving weirdly. Most of the Republican Party's brain has been eaten away by 40% and no one really notices.
Yeah. Okay, that's called Brain Dead?
Yeah.
Amazon Prime?
Yeah.
One season? Okay. I just queued up Netflix. It's on there. It's look and then, you know, WHO apostrophe S back.
Okay. All right. Good. Yeah. Good, good.
But yeah, it's in German, so you have to sit through the subtitles, but.
Oh, it's well worth it. And I always enjoy listening to German anyway.
Well worth it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the way the media treats, I don't want to give too much away, but the way the media treats Hitler as if he's a joke because they think he's just an impressionist doing a really good straight man style impression of Hitler for shock value. You know, they think he's a comedian. And, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah,
I
he's an entertainment property.
Yeah, exactly. It's just entertaining.
And, from the German cultural perspective, it's also a commentary on the acceptability of, you know, bringing him up in conversation in the modern era when it never would have been done 20, 30 years ago.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, yeah, I mean, it was based on a novel, which I would like to pick up one of these days, but I mean, it was obviously meant as a commentary on modern day Germany, but I think it just worked out that it accidentally has become a commentary on our American election.
Well, you know, there was somebody showed up on MSNBC with Tamron Hall earlier today and laid it out and said that, you know, what has happened to the GOP and the ascendancy of Trump is the fault of Joe Scarborough. The poll quote is, he turned his show into a Trump super PAC for 6 months.
Well, he did.
He damn sure did.
Yeah.
And you'd like to think there's some sort of accountability.
Yeah.
But there's not. I mean, Billy Bush, cousin of W., is apparently getting ready to get canned from the Today Show for his part in the Trump affair.
Yeah.
On the other hand, nah, Joe Scarborough, not so much. When Joe Scarborough had a far greater impact on Trump's campaign than you know, poor little neo-maxi Zoom dweeby Billy Bush.
Yeah.
I just love that phrase. God, you know, God bless the Breakfast Club for introducing that into the lexicon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rolls right off the tongue.
It's just easy.
Yeah.
So you've got your work cut out for you. Michael and Madison, beer spa entrepreneur.
All right, I'll try to get right on that.
Yeah, do but, please. And we also need to map out the secret route for me to redo the low-rent, low-budget version of Smokey and the Bandit to come up and fill up a semi with New Glarus beer and bring it back to West Virginia.
Yeah, you got to check out the brewery. It's beautiful.
Oh, I hear. And chock full of progressive values, too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, did you have a chance yet to discuss in much depth the whole public and private positions thing? Because I kind of have a take on it.
But. No, you're welcome to bring it forward. I mean, I like the Lincoln movie too, but my God, how does that enter into conversation? But go ahead.
Well, I mean, okay, so, you know, I guess I was kind of like, you know, Tracy, you know, when she said yesterday, she's just like, oh, my God, shut the fuck up, Hillary. You sound like an idiot. I kind of felt that way, too, when I was watching her give the answer in the debate. But it's, and, you know, and then, it's, of course, it's set up Trump for his cheap little Honest Abe jokes. But, you know, whenever something seems that ridiculous to me, like the bucket of losers quote, I you know, I want to look into it. And, I, you know, I read the quote in context on WikiLeaks, again, if you trust WikiLeaks. But that's where the story comes from. So, you know, what else can you go by? If you read the entire excerpt of the speech where that quote allegedly came from, that's what she was talking about.
Yeah, and she's right.
And right. And that's the thing. It sounds stupid. I kind of felt like that question, because it did. Her answer sounded stupid if you're just sitting there not expecting it. You know, when you're watching it on TV. I mean, she was probably expecting it. But, I mean, as a viewer, if you're just sitting at home and you're not expecting it, and then, boom, it sounds stupid as hell. But when you look at it, it reminded me of the whole thing. You remember when one of the moderators asked Dukakis what he would do if his wife was raped, if that would change?
Oh, God, Bernie Shaw, burn in hell for that, yeah.
Yeah, if it would change his opinion on the death penalty, I believe. And when you ask a question like that, you're setting up the candidate to look to make an ass of themselves, because there's no way to answer.
Well, the Dukakis question is the original gotcha question.
Right, and this just seemed like who was it? Martha Raddatz that asked the question.
Yeah.
Okay, so she, I presumably had the context or had access to it. If she didn't look at the context. And she's a, you know, shitty journalist. But the context is right there on WikiLeaks. You could clearly see that it did come from a lengthy discussion that she was having about the Lincoln movie. I remember after I read it, and I was like, oh, yeah. Because I remember taking my parents to see the Lincoln movie, and we walked out of that, and we had that exact same discussion.
Yeah.
You know, me and my parents. That's the natural takeaway of the movie. Is that in order to get the 13th Amendment passed, Lincoln had to do a lot of maneuvering and backroom deals and sausage making, you know, and, you know, it seems kind of sleazy, you know, but, you know, ends justify the means kind of thing. But,
well, and I mean, Lincoln,
sometimes they do.
Right. And you know, any historian will tell you, Michael, that Lincoln was enigmatic. I mean, yeah. he says things that are directly at odds with themselves.
Sure.
You know, he said, if I could free the slaves and keep the Union together, I would. If keeping the Union together meant continuing slavery, I would. He was an ends-based politician. That is not to say that he is a bad person. You know, you yourself used the phrase sausage making, and you used the phrase because Hillary used the phrase sausage making.
Yeah.
Well, that is a direct reference to Bismarck.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Bismarck who said there are two things you do not want to see made, laws and sausages.
Right.
Because, you know, the inference being that in both cases, it's kind of a nasty business. You wind up with something good.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of nasty that goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, I didn't see Lincoln with anybody. My kids and Agnes, I think, were, watching some vampire movie or something.
Sure.
At the time. But I came out of there completely wowed, saying, you know, Steven Spielberg did a really, really good job of highlighting just how complex the process of getting an important piece of legislation passed, and particularly that important piece of legislation passed. Because, you know, we all have this notion that, well, you know, and then the North won the Civil War, and the blacks were freed, and slavery was ended, and everything was hunky-dory. No, damn it, it wasn't.
Yeah.
And it was all in the balance, you know, it was all in the balance up to the very end.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I thought, if anything, Michael, I thought that question was rather an act of desperation on Martha Raddatz's part so as not to be accused of being in the tank for Hillary.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. It was one of these both sides do it moments where, you know, well, we asked Trump about grabbing pussy, so now we have to ask Hillary about the most recent thing that.
Well, no, I mean, it fit the model because, yeah, we're going to ask Trump about that, so then we'll ask Hillary about being two-faced.
Right. Right. But it's just for Martha to take that completely out of context, and when she presumably knew the context, and it set Hillary up to because what other thing? Because once the question is asked, it's sort of like, that's why I referenced the Dukakis situation. What else is she going to say? You know, she her answer, and God knows, I have my issues with Hillary. I mean, in the primary, I was, you know, very hard on her. But in this instance, she did not stretch the truth, you know.
No. And, you know, I wish she was.
As I recall, it was in the context of such and such a conversation. And I am a little suspicious. I don't mean to sound as paranoid as the Jill bots I was talking about last night, but I wonder if that public and private positions thing, if that verbiage wasn't just tweaked a little bit by one of the hackers or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. But by the same token, I don't have a problem believing that of a politician.
No,
I mean,
no, I don't either.
I think the same could be said of Barack Obama.
Sure.
Barack Obama very publicly said when he was a senator from Illinois that the only way to solve the health care crisis in the United States was to have universal single-payer health care. And then we got Obamacare.
Yeah.
I think that's a classic example. Mm-hmm. He may very well believe to this day that the real answer is universal single-payer health care. Many of us do.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think there's any of us who believe that who think that that there is a direct path to it.
Yeah.
And so at best, we hope that maybe that maybe something in the Affordable Care Act is. And of course, you know, I've said for a long time, Michael, that the Medicaid expansion was exactly that. And that is why John Roberts had to kill it.
Yeah.
You know, we can, John Roberts said we can have the Affordable Care Act nationwide as an expression of the Congress's power to tax. But oh, hell no, we can, the federal government cannot compel the several states to take free money. You know, That's the kind of thing that drives that would drive a first year law student around the bend.
Yeah,
I mean that's a level. There's some real bad constitutional analysis out there, and that part of it was terrible. But the way forward, in a way, and we're learning it. I mean, even the business with Bill Clinton saying that it was crazy. He didn't say the Affordable Care Act was crazy. He said it was crazy that we have that gray area for people who don't qualify for the subsidies and yet don't make enough money to just pay for everything on their own.
Yeah.
So maybe we find out what that this is the way forward if we ever get a responsible Congress. And yeah, even Donald Trump, Michael, acknowledges that that's the direction we go in, because if you recall, on Sunday night, he said, and of course, you know, Hillary wants to go to universal single-payer health care, you know, which is terrible, horrible, horrible. He knows that's the direction, too.
Yeah.
Because he even went so far as to talk about the horrible, horrible, very bad, no good, really terrible Canadian communist health care system. So, I wish Hillary was snappier with a comeback than she is.
Yeah.
But if you had to, you know, in the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, T.S. Eliot writes, "We have measured out our lives in coffee spoons." Well, she has had to measure out every word
in coffee spoons for the last 25 years because there's a Limbaugh, a Hannity, a Drudge, some sick right-wing freak ready to pounce on them. And that will make a cautious soul of you if you have presidential ambitions.
And I think that's the problem I have with go back to my grievances with the Jill bots. That's my problem I have with them is they will glom onto all that right wing bullshit. You know, God knows we could spend the rest of the show talking about all my issues with Hillary Clinton. But at least during the primaries, I tried to base whether it's my opinion or factual assertion, I tried to base it on real evidence, you know, not twisting words taken out of context or, as is often the case, just making shit up, just completely fabricated hoax stuff, conspiracy stuff. And I see these Stein people. They'll repost Breitbart. They'll repost Fox News. That the page that I was kind of bitching about last night. They've got 100,000 or more followers, and I'm sure 99% of them followed the page when Bernie was still in the primaries. You know, because they support Bernie. And now that that part of the process is over, you know, these Stein people have basically hijacked this, you know. So they put this bullshit out there, this right-wing garbage out there to tear down Hillary in because they think that'll help Jill get to 5% or something. And, you know, hundreds of thousands of people see this, you know, and then maybe it gets shared, you know, millions of people see this. I mean, I know it's just freaking Facebook, but, you know, a lot of people, that's where they get their info, you know, and they won't dig into it. They won't check to see.
Right. Because
false.
They're posting it because of confirmation bias. I've got my own little private burrs under my saddle. I'm sick and tired of hearing, well, you know, Hillary and the DNC stole the election from Bernie.
Yeah.
I mean, goddammit, I can do math. And there was some wrangling going on, and there was some definitely some tactical decisions made. I mean, the reason for front-loading the Confederacy was to make her look inevitable. Because that's where she was much more of a juggernaut, even though the Confederacy matters not a tinker's damn to her presidential ambitions outside Virginia and North Carolina.
Yeah.
But that's not the same as stealing an election.
Right. But yeah, and I see that all the time too, and I'm getting sick of it as well. You know, I'm not happy with how the primary turned out, you know, and I'm glad Debbie Wasserman Schultz is gone. You know, she can go pound sand. I don't care. But yeah, I agree with you. If I have one grievance with the Bernie Sanders campaign, I don't know how you feel about it. Maybe I'm off base here. I feel like they shouldn't have written off the Confederacy because, yeah, it doesn't matter, like you said, in the general, but you need it to win the primary.
Well, I don't think
he probably couldn't have won any state, but because, you know, the Democrat primary in most states is proportional, if he would have been, instead of getting blown out, you know, 80-20, if he could have lost 40-60 in the Confederacy, that would have netted him a lot of delegates.
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that, you know, they did try to make a concerted effort at South Carolina, and from the inside of South Carolina, I was told privately that the Bernie operation on the ground in South Carolina was terrible, just awful.
Right.
And that it was almost impossible.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it was impossible. It was impossible to do what needed to be done.
Yeah.
And you know, to have been able to make a run at the Confederacy would have required a campaign that announced itself months in advance. And even then, you
That's
know, Bernie
true.
Bernie
That's
toured
true.
The South. He did, and he drew huge audiences. But you're dealing with a Democratic electorate down there that is fairly entrenched and set in its ways.
Yeah.
And for good or ill, in a choice between the devil you know and the angel you don't, sometimes you choose the devil you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, I wish it was otherwise, but... But there's stuff to be done, and, you know, with Hillary being the nominee and maybe even president, I see no reason to expect it to be done. But the primaries, the Democratic primaries, need to be rearranged, and I still say this, need to be rearranged in such a way as to reflect the dominant Democratic states that will matter in November.
Yeah.
Because that's going to tell you a lot more about the viability of the candidate. There's nothing to be learned by sweeping through the Confederacy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's up on my list with getting rid of the 22nd Amendment.
Yeah, that's a pet peeve of mine too.
We'll have to make that an issue the next time there's a Republican president.
Yeah.
But of course, then the Democrats will howl and. I mean, it's amazing the amount of pushback that comes with that issue, Michael.
Yeah.
Dictators. Yeah, well, winning World War II. I mean,
it's as if we dodged a bullet because FDR just happened to not be Hitler.
Right. I mean, can you imagine? Oh, man, what happens to World War II if Wendell Willkie becomes president in 1940? Four.
Yeah.
I mean, or 1940 for that matter.
Yeah.
It's not as simple an analysis as merely saying, eight years is long enough. Because sometimes 8 years isn't long enough.
No. I don't even know where the last 8 years went.
No, and who wouldn't had Barack Obama been running, he would have mopped the floor with Donald Trump. I mean, it would have been a year long campaign that was just a year long version of what he did to him at the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Oh, that's why I disagree with you slightly. If hypothetically, if they ran against each other, yes, but I contend that if Barack Obama could run for a third term, Trump's scared of him. He wouldn't. I don't think he would run.
It probably would have been Trump versus, you know, another Bush, or Trump
you
versus
Obama
Kasich.
Versus...
I mean, or Obama. Yeah, sorry,
yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, Barack Obama versus Kasich or Jeb or whoever. But it doesn't matter. He'd mop the floor with any of those guys. But
that's alternate reality stuff. But
yeah.
But somehow, one of these days, we're going to be confronted with the issue. And you know what? It could be. It doesn't necessarily have to be World War II, Michael, or World War III. It may very well be climate change.
Climate change. Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
Because eight years has not proven to be enough for Barack Obama to be able to outlast the deniers in the Congress.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a shame. Probably the worst amendment.
Speaking of climate change, ever. Is it getting cold in Madison yet?
Yeah, a little bit of a chill. It's pretty nice out. It's kind of light jacket or a hoodie type weather.
Oh, it's that line from Miss Congeniality then. What's your idea of the perfect date? Oh, probably about April 24th. All you need is a light jacket.
There you go. Yeah. Well, if you don't mind, I kind of wanted to put a little bookend on what I was rambling about.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't think you were rambling, but yeah, bookend away.
I was kind of, you know, bitching about, you know, the Jill Stein page, which is actually called Bernie Sanders for President. And just so everybody knows, there's lots of different Bernie Sanders for President 2016 Facebook groups. You know, there's plenty of them. But there's one, there's at least one, I think there's a couple of them, but there's at least one in particular that just kept just filling my Facebook page with garbage, you know. And it was just like, okay, I get it. You guys have been hijacked by Jill Stein fans, you know. And this page no longer represents anything to do with the wishes or intentions of Bernie Sanders. But whatever, you know, they just glommed onto it and hijacked it so that they could automatically have that audience on Facebook, you know. And I, you know, I tried to debunk the bucket losers thing and I was shut down. You know, they literally wouldn't let me post it on the page, you know, and in the comments section, people just ignored me or called me names or whatever. But some of the stuff that what I did want to mention, just a few things that are typical of what that page does post, you know. And again, this goes out to hundreds of thousands of Bernie fans, you know, presumably, you know. And it seems like Jill isn't going anywhere, but it seems like it's almost aimed at depressing the vote, you know.
Yeah.
These people aren't going to vote for Jill.
Got to bring on the apocryph, man.
Yeah. They're not going to vote for, you know, a lot of these ex-Bernie fans, they're not going to vote for Jill, but this garbage that they keep posting seems to be aimed at just depressing the vote for Hillary. They, you know, I've even seen on this page where people, you know, the one of the most disgusting things I saw was, remember the Obama video, the Barack Obama video that surfaced a couple years ago where he's reading from his memoir and he says the phrase pussy and ribs.
Yeah.
And he's not even he's reading in the voice of a character in his memoir. Those are not his own words, you know. But somebody posted that over the weekend, you know, presumably to make the point, oh, you know, because Barack Obama is associated with Hillary Clinton, so you know, therefore, you
yeah,
know,
he can say
Obama.
It, but Trump can't.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's that's the thing. These are a bunch of Jill bots, and they post this Trumpansy garbage. You know, I saw one today, and I didn't reply to it. I'm done with. I can't deal with these people anymore. I give up. But I saw one today where they posted just an image with a quote from Jimmy Carter that's fake. That says the novelty of electing, it's got a picture of Hillary Clinton, and then it says something like the novelty of electing the first woman president is not as important as electing somebody with morality and integrity, something like that. And underneath it, it says Jimmy Carter. I see something like that, and I'm like, bullshit. He didn't, Jimmy Carter
yep, right.
did not fucking say that in this lifetime, any lifetime, no way. And of course, I Snopes'd it. And Snopes is like, there are no sources that we can find to verify this quote. So it's false. And, you know, but it doesn't matter. The admins and the mods on this, you know, Bernie, quote unquote, Bernie for president.
Well, but,
hijacked by the Jill bots. They let it through. They let it through.
Yeah. But see, Michael, that's the thing with that, though. They've finally gotten it through their heads that Jill's not going to be president. That was a bitter pill to swallow.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But now they've moved on to, well, no, but we're going to get the 5% so the Greens can qualify for federal funding, man.
Yeah.
And that ain't going to happen either.
No. This, let me just give you a little, this is how these people think. I mean, again, I have and I think they're making a mistake. Well, at least. Now, I will tolerate. In my face, but, so, you know, not all Jill Stein fans, I get it, but you know, a good chunk of them online in these forums, they're just desperate. One of them, so I got into this little, you know, little back and forth, you know, fight because you know I was trying to debunk something, and of course they just ignore Snopes. They think Snopes is a Clinton conspiracy.
Clinton conspiracy. Right.
Yeah. And they don't believe objective evidence, whatever. So they'll just reply with nonsense, you know. And one of them says nobody could vote for no real Bernie supporter could vote for Trump or Hillary. So I just was like, there's logic to that. Like,
well, because they said
Trump or Hillary. So I said, so Bernie wasn't a Bernie supporter?
Ooh.
Right?
Well, he sold out, man.
No, and this is what kills me. The response I got, which wasn't from the same person, it was from a different person who was trying to, like, back this other guy up. They said, Michael, Bernie had no choice. He was brought to heel by his friends. He quietly knowing was to vote for Jill. He's not going, I'm just paraphrasing from memory, but I think I'm getting it right. There's no way in hell that he's going to vote for that hag. You know, he's going to vote for Jill when he gets in that booth, and so should we all. And I'm just picturing.
Oh, my God.
That's typical. That's typical, at least in this particular weird corner of the internet. That's typical in the comment section. I mean, you know, so I'm just picturing, you know, Bernie in Bill and Hillary's, you know, underground torture dungeon. You know, and they only, you know, screaming, you with know, the, screaming,
wait, wait,
there
is there, wait,
lights.
Is there a gimp mask?
Yeah. I was thinking Star Trek. Yeah, that too. I was thinking, remember when Picard was tortured and he kept shouting, there are four lights.
Yeah.
They wanted him to say there were five lights, but there were only four. And he just was defiant. You know, I'm picturing Bernie in Bill and Hillary's torture dungeon. Yeah, maybe with the gimp mask. Maybe he's shouting, there are four lights. And they only let him out to give, stump speeches, you know, and appearance.
For Hillary.
Yeah. But somehow, because he's, you know, because Bernie is, I love Bernie. Don't get me wrong. I'm not mocking Bernie. I'm mocking these weirdos' perception of Bernie. Their delusional, paranoid perception, you know, that he was brought to heel by their threats. So he's in the torture dungeon, but he's somehow MacGyvered, you know, when none of the Clintons were looking. He somehow MacGyvered up, you know, a radio. Maybe it's a Wi-Fi device, you know. I know it rots people's brains, but, you know, sometimes ends justify the means. So he's rigged up some secret device that Bill and Hillary don't know about, and that's how he sends that's how he quietly sends the signals to the Jill Bot's tinfoil hats.
And the fillings in their teeth.
Well, exactly.
God, it's precious, isn't it?
Utter lunacy.
But at the and we got to wrap up. But the
yeah.
But see, the reason for all of this is that cognitive dissonance will only get you so far.
Yeah.
And the same with bias confirmation. And I think there's if they can fantasize, you know, what you just described, that he's secretly going to go in and vote for Jill. Then I can posit as well that they realize that there really is a two-party system in this country, and that the only hope we have as progressives is to take over one of the two.
Yeah.
And it ain't going to happen with the GOP because, you know, the teabaggers would just bludgeon them to death. Mm-hmm. They'd beat them to death with their own hacky sacks. And so, you know, you want progressivism? You're going to have to create it inside the Democratic Party. Right. And that just hangs like a bone in their throats. And I understand that, but I think it's true.
Yeah, I thought that was the whole takeaway of Bernie's almost but not quite revolution.
Yeah. I mean, that was the idea. We keep this thing going forward, and 2018 is a real thing. Michael, we got to get out of here, but it's been a delightful conversation.
Good talking to you, Bob.
All right. Spa. Beer spa.
Okay.
All right.
I'll start saving up.
All right. See ya. Bye.
See ya.
And by the way, Mike in Cascadia says, I'm in on the beer spa idea. Hey, y'all, I got to get out of here. I got to go pick up Margie's surgery for Ferg tomorrow. Remember, I hope that doesn't interfere with the program, but if it does, it does, and that's, you know, okay. Have a great night, everybody. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.